The New York Review of Books has been admired as a premier independent publication discussing literary works, current issues, the arts, history, and much more in the half century since it began in 1963. Robert Silvers, who founded the Review with Barbara Epstein, joins us now to discuss his experiences editing it. And joining us also are John Banville, a longtime New York Review contributor and the author of over 18 books, including the Booker Prize-winning novel The Sea, and Daryl Pinkney, the acclaimed author of High Cotton and Out There, Mavericks of Black Literature. And I'm very thrilled to welcome John Banville, Daryl Pinkney, and Bob Silvers back to our show. Hello.
Hello.
Bob, you're putting out a facsimile of the very first publication of the New York Review of Books this year?
Yeah, we are. We reprinted the first issue, which was issued during the newspaper strike of 1963, the typographer's strike. The New York Times was off publication for 3 months. My friend Jason Epstein had an inspiration, which is, this is the only time, and this is what he told me when he rang me at Harper's, where I was an editor, the only time you could put out a new book review without a penny, because the publishers were going crazy. No place to advertise their books, and they'd all take a page.
And it was basically intended just to be a book review.
It was intended, as we said, not to fill the gap provided by the strike, but to show what a new kind of book review could be.
And when you look back at that first edition, are you proud of what you see?
Well,
do you have any essays that are particular favorites?
Well, I feel there were marvelous pieces in there by F.W. DePuy on Jimmy Baldwin, by Norman Mailer on Hemingway, by Bill Styron on the South, by Gore Vidal. By
not a bad list of contributors.
Robert Lowell, Elizabeth Hardwick, and above all, I would say, Mary McCarthy on William Burroughs.
Superb review.
Because she talked about how the addiction of Burroughs affected, and other addicts, affected the life of sex.
Now, has the review changed much over the 50 years since it was first conceived?
I would say it's changing all the time. Yes, it's changed in many ways. We have at the Review, we started out with total freedom because we owned it, because no one could tell us what to do, because we were the publishers. And we therefore had to confront wave after wave of world events, the death of Kennedy, the Vietnam War, the Nixon administration, and many other enormous political events and social events, including the new media.
So you were writing think pieces, publishing think pieces as well, not just things that were inspired by a book that
Point is, we thought that books could be the occasion for any kind of commentary, but in every issue you will find at least two pieces that are not book reviews.
John, how did you start writing for the New York Review? You were living in Ireland, weren't you?
I was at a party here in New York, and Mr. Silvers approached me and said, "Where are you staying? I'll send something around." And he sent around a book for me to review. This is about 89, 90. I was thrilled at the prospect of writing for the New York Review of Books, which was, you know, for me, a legend.
I always assumed, without looking it up, that the New York Review was based partly modeled on the London Review of Books, until I realized the London Review was started in 1979.
By the New York Review.
By you.
We started it. We owned it. We chose the editor, Carl Miller, who had been one of our contributors. And at a certain point, we realized that we couldn't carry it on, and other people valiantly came forward to carry it on. At considerable cost.
There was a wonderful period when, if you bought the New York Review of Books, you got the London Review of Books folded into it. It was wonderful.
Yeah. Now, have you written for both?
Yes.
Daryl, when did you start writing for the New York Review of Books? You started very soon after it was created.
10 years later, I was a student at Columbia, a student of Elizabeth Hardwick's, one of the sort of founders and writers, and just my interest in her work led me to read the issues, and I began to haunt the office. And finally, a few years later, Mr. Silvers said, "Why don't you try this?" And I did.
So you were the kid who hung around and...
The bad penny.
Not at all. He was working with Barbara. He was working with all kinds of things, carrying on the paper.
Well, how is writing for the Review different from writing for other publications you've contributed to, like The Nation or Slate more recently?
Well, you know, those magazines are well, and I like them, and so but each magazine is different, and this one is very special to me because... you could write at length and explore avenues of thought that you weren't encouraged to elsewhere. And they were always on the side of what you were trying to say.
So you were encouraged to spread
very much
out.
So, yes.
Bob, you're admired for being able to pair a writer with an unexpected topic that will produce a good essay. How do you choose which topic to assign to a writer, or do the writers come to you and say, I'm in love with this book, or I hate this book, I want to do something on
I'll
it.
I'll tell you, unlike all of the big magazines, we have no staff writers. We commission every single article. And it's simply a question that in our minds we have a number of writers we admire. And we're constantly thinking, what might they do? And often, what might they do that would be different from what they regularly do?
And you've wound up having 7,759 contributors over the years, and that includes some who have been repeat offenders.
And that means that we've had over 16,000 pieces in these years.
And think how often he's read them.
And we've covered dozens of wars.
Was there anything like this publication before it was instituted?
Barbara and
London,
London
Literary, the Times Literary Supplement, or
no? We admired the book section of the New Statesman, and we used many writers from Partisan Review. Elizabeth Hardwick, who is really the inspiring person for the Review, and writers like Alfred Kazin and Mary McCarthy, and others had written for the Partisan Review, but never for a book review.
Now, John, how does it work with you? Does Bob just say, John, I think this is a book you might be interested in reviewing?
At the expense of causing Bob Silvers to blush, I have to say he's a genius as an editor.
Is he tough?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I was reading the other day.
Darryl, you agree.
The other day I was reading the letters of Italo Calvino, a letter from the 1970s to Mr. Silver saying, thank you for your 12-page letter of editorial suggestions. But he has a way of... I mean, over the years, he sent me books, and I've looked at them, and I thought, why on earth is he sending me this? And then I read the book, and I realize that somehow it is suited to me. But there is a kind of genius. I've been a books editor myself, and I know a genius when I see one.
Well, you specialize in letters, because your most recent... piece in the New York Review of Books was about a new translation of Rilke's letters to a young poet.
I don't specialize. This is the wonderful thing about New York Review of Books. You never know what's going to come in that FedEx parcel. It's very exciting.
It is interesting that Rilke was quite youthful himself when he wrote that.
Yes. It's a wonderful little book. Perfect book if you've got a nephew who wants to be a writer, this is the book. Give him Rilke's letters to a young poet.
Because it's good advice?
It's good advice, and it will put off a lot of people, which is a good
That's
thing.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah.
Darryl, your most recent pieces in the Review have been about President Obama and the presidential election. What is the New York Review of Books approach to writing about politics?
Well, it's not the expected line. In any way, and it very much depends on who's writing the article. I guess I have specialized in writing about black politics and black culture because it's something I didn't study in school. And I remember James Baldwin once complaining that he was born with his subject matter, but at some point I became really interested in this, and the Review helped me find all this history and literature. Help me sort of explore it. So,
And you've written a couple of pieces on James Baldwin. The first one in 1979.
Yeah, let's pass over that.
Well, and then more recently, 2010.
Okay.
So you want to pass over that? Was
no,
that why
better.
You revisited his
yes,
work?
Yes.
Did you think it got all wrong in 1979?
Well, the tone was certainly wrong. But he was alive then, so that was a different matter.
But 31 years later...
You have more patience and sympathy for... what he was trying to do and the pressures in his life. And after all, you know, he's a great writer. Not everything by a great writer has to be great.
We also a writer, when the writer's alive, we don't have a sense of how much of an impact they're going to, a lasting impact. We
True.
Often think some writers are going to be greats for the ages, and then they're forgotten within 10 years, and others wind up becoming
yes.
Influences for forever.
Yeah, they come and go. I don't believe in the canon. I think writers make the canon just from what they care about.
Bob, in looking over the 50 years of your publications, does that become clear?
Well, I think what is my general sense is that there's no template, no pattern, no defined task even, that you have to be open to one new phenomenon after another and try to make a fresh approach to it. And that includes the new communications, the new social media. It includes Facebook and tweets. It's an important point that there are millions or billions of words that are now cast into the atmosphere that of which there is hardly any critical examination or even a critical approach to assessing the worth, let's say, of one tweet or another. No one even thinks about that.
Well, almost everything is evaluated in a Yelp-type approach these
right.
days. And you're competing with people who are writing those little things on Amazon.
And not only on Amazon, but on millions of blogs and millions of interventions of every kind. And here is a major point, that it used to be possible, for example, to have the Oxford Book of Aphorisms collected by John Gross from literary sources. It's inconceivable at the moment to think of a way to having an Oxford Book of Tweets. Or an Oxford Book of Blogs, you would have. How would you do it? How would you? What standards would you use? Would you see that many tweets are nothing more than rather limp wisecracks? Why some may be metaphors of genius. So we haven't really begun to think about a critical approach to this new world.
Well, you've written a blog on just recently on the suit for the New York Review. Darryl, so...
Well, that's Peter Brooks. Yes, and that's the blog. But I think that's an important distinction about the Review. So much that's out there is ephemeral, and the Review isn't. You save the issues. You return to them. You think about them.
Unfortunately, I have this huge pile in my house, and
there's that.
My wife keeps on saying,
all this
we've got to get rid of some of these.
Sort of bubble bath time. But also my memory of the offices of the Review is that you were always falling in love with something that you read, something in the paper, someone who'd written it, someone in the office, a book you'd heard about, a piece of music, a place, a history. So the Review is sort of permanent.
I mean,
look,
the marvelous thing about the Review is it's so eclectic. I mean, in the latest issue that I've seen, there's a long and very interesting review of 50 Shades of Grey. There's an absolutely fascinating article about deep sea diving. There's a very informed piece about Egyptian politics at the moment, as
really
well
good.
As book reviews.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a wonderful issue.
And one of my favorite pieces of recent memory was Daniel Mendelsohn's piece on Mad Men, in which he took the show a lot more seriously than most people
he
do.
He did. He did. And, of course, he's a classical scholar, a great expert on Euripides, and he's taken on for us not only Mad Men, but films like Avatar and films about Alexander the Great. He's able to bring a kind of great scholar's criticism to this popular culture.
Now, John, you're do you think that writers are good reviewers?
Not all writers, obviously. Some are. I mean, I've been doing it for a long time. I've been practicing for a long time. I hope I'm getting somewhere.
Joyce Carol Oates prefers to only review things that she likes.
Well, for the most part, that's what we do. I'm mostly, if I have books that I really hate, I send them back. Not always, but mostly I send them back. Because I feel, you know, I do feel that it is important to be as positive as one can be. We're trying to get people to read. We're trying to continue to emphasize the importance of the book. There's no point in coming out and kicking things constantly.
Now, there's going to be a celebration tonight at Town Hall for the 50th anniversary.
There is, yes.
Can my listeners attend?
Yes, there are still tickets. There are still tickets for to go to Town Hall. And Daryl will appear. John will appear. Joan Didion will be the first speaker. She's going to be reading from a piece she wrote years ago on the Central Park jogger, which is very controversial.
Yeah.
And Michael Chabon is taking part. And we have eight writers from the review, each both recalling something they've done and commenting on things now.
And both John Banville and Daryl Pinkney will be participating.
Yeah.
When I look over the list of people living and dead, it's quite extraordinary some of the people who have contributed. W.H. Auden, Susan Sontag, Truman Capote, Elizabeth Hardwick, Saul Bellow.
Yes.
We can go on. Mary McCarthy, a huge, fabulous list. One listener, we have very little time, wonders what you think of the new journalism a la Tom Wolfe. Does that fit in with your vision?
It's hardly new now.
Yeah.
It was new a long time ago, and I didn't think much of it then.
Well, some of the Barbara Goldsmith's interview with Viva was fantastic. That was one of those new journalism pieces.
That was in the New York Review?
No.
Have things... No.
Although Viva wanted to write for the New York Review.
She did.
Things probably have changed a little bit since Barbara Epstein died. She was also a great editor.
A great editor and a great collaborator for many, many years in a very close way.
Thank you all three so much for being with us. Bob Silver, John Banville, Daryl Pinkney, and... Happy anniversary for the New York Review of Books.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
7:30 at Town Hall tonight.